I want to start by telling you a story that comes to us from Alice Walker. She wrote this story in the mid-20th century, and it's called The Welcome Table. Of course, the title calls back to the old African-American spiritual of nearly the same name, I'm Going to Sit at the Welcome Table, which we're going to be singing later today in the service. And the story is about an old black woman who gets up on a Sunday morning, puts on her best clothes, and walks to church. But instead of walking to her black church, she walks to the white church in town. Now, when she shows up, the white folks are beside themselves as she comes in the door. The church ladies start to murmur. Keep in mind, this is set in mid-20th century, so like 50s, 60s. Church ladies start to murmur. The ushers are in a tizzy, and the minister of the church says to her, "Auntie, you know this is not your church, right?" But the woman stays. In the story, she sits in a pew, still and strong and silent, and she prays. Eventually, the women of the church convince their husbands to physically remove the old black woman from the sanctuary. So she's kicked out in the cold so that the white people can go back to their business as usual, so that they can sing, praise God, and listen to the preacher talk about the promise of God's love. But here's the twist. Outside in the cold, the old woman sees Jesus walking down the street towards her. She is filled with joy and takes off, following him down the road with gladness in her heart and a smile on her face. This story invites us into the complicated concept of the welcome table as a metaphor for beloved community. Specifically, I think it invites us to consider where the table is set, where the feast is located, where the beloved community is experienced. Was it inside the church for the white worshipers in the story? Where was it for the old black woman? And where is it for us today? Where is the beloved community? And then there's the whole question of when. When will the welcome table be laid? When will we feast? Perhaps here and now. Or, as the old hymn suggests, maybe it will be sometime in the future on some yet unknown great day. Or maybe the answer lies somewhere within the tension between now and then. For a Unitarian Universalist response to the question of when, typically as a faith, many of us try to answer these questions, where and when the welcome table of beloved community will be set, with an affirmation of the here and now. We don't usually tend to look to someday or to somewhere else. We look around. We see what we can do right now, here, in this moment, in time, to expand welcome and further build beloved community. Now, theologians would call this, if you want the fancy word, a radically realized eschatology. It's that philosophy that the final destiny of humankind and all souls is here on earth. Many of us, trusting this, set the table wide and warmly welcome in all who seek and come to our doors. We work hard in this tradition to manifest beloved community in real time. All are welcome, we proclaim. But is it true? Is it true? I don't think I have to tell you that we have a long history of racial tension in our movement, and unfortunately, some people have historically been more welcome than others. I, for one, have always felt welcome in just about every UU space I've ever been in. In congregations across the Midwest and New England, I've felt at home. No matter the location, no matter the circumstance, I've never really had to question my belonging. I think it's because I fit the mold. I'm white, cisgender, middle class, liberal, I'm a religious pluralist, I'm a lifelong UU. I fit the mold. I can go just about anywhere in our movement, and I can trust that the table has been set for me. I can have a comfortable experience and enjoy the company of other people like me in a culture that I'm familiar with. This is not the case for people of color and for people from different class backgrounds who visit our congregations. It's not always the case. Of course, it's not overt or obvious. We don't engage in extreme versions of hostility, like the characters in Alice Walker's story. But sometimes, despite our best intentions, we say all are welcome, and yet we actually haven't figured out what that means. For example, a person of color who visited our church last year told me that no one talked to him. A former colleague of mine at the UU Urban Ministry in Boston, an African-American Christian woman, recently told me with a heavy sigh that after being asked to pray in a UU setting, she was told by a white lady, "We don't pray that way." And my wife, who grew up in Appalachia, felt right at home in her home church, in her home congregation of Charleston, West Virginia. But when she moved to New England, she received a cold reception in UU spaces. Maybe it's her southern accent. Maybe it was just too much for people to bridge a class difference that wide. And there are so many other stories like this, unfortunately, that break my heart. The movement I love and have committed my whole life to, the movement which likes to think of itself as having the biggest, most welcoming table of all, is still struggling to live into that ideal. In particular, I know we're still struggling to welcome people on the margins, people of color, indigenous people, people experiencing poverty, transgender people, queer folks, and others. Now, let's not forget how extraordinary it is that we trust in the possibility of experiencing beloved community within our lifetimes. And we're not there yet. It is still not now. And I know we want to change this. I know we all want to live up to what our UUA president, the Reverend Susan Frederick Gray, tells us when she says that no one is outside the circle of love. So I wanted to think a little bit with you all today about how we get there. There are lots of ideas. One idea is to start getting serious about radical hospitality and sincerely embodying it in all we do. You may have heard the term before, and it can sound complicated, but radical hospitality is simply the concept of people and communities welcoming those who are not like themselves and expecting nothing in exchange or in return for offering this welcome. In their book, Radical Hospitality, Benedict's Way of Love, Father Daniel Homan and Lonnie Collins Pratt explain it this way. They say, rather than viewing any person in terms of how they benefit us, radical hospitality means accepting the person with no thought of personal benefit. Instead of seeking persons who support the congregation, actively seek persons who need the support of the congregation. To become hospitable means finding ways to welcome the marginalized, forgotten, and the misunderstood among us. This concept, radical hospitality, is, of course, rooted in the most ancient of religious concepts, that of welcoming the stranger. You know this one. I know you do. There are stories of it across the religious traditions. Abraham, like we heard in the reading earlier, and others in the Hebrew scriptures. stories in the Christian scriptures and in the Quran. The common theme among all of these stories of welcoming the stranger seems to be that when it is eventually revealed later on that the stranger is actually God or an angel or the holy, the moral of the story is that each encounter with a stranger is an opportunity to encounter the holy, to touch the sacred, to be transformed by love. When we practice radical hospitality and welcome strangers in our UU congregations, we are blessed beyond our imaginings. But it's not easy. Radical hospitality involves discomfort and risk, faith and patience. And lucky for me, it is a teachable skill. You can learn how to practice radical hospitality. Once, when I was 25 years old, and I was working as a director of religious education in one of our congregations, we were hosting a pancake breakfast, and it was a fundraiser. Admission was $5. So I was upstairs taking the money and sending everyone downstairs to the fellowship hall to eat, when a homeless man appeared in line and said he didn't have any money, but he wondered if he could eat with us. And I, with no excuse for my bad behavior, other than youth and ignorance, completely froze. "I don't know," I said. "Let me check." So I did. I went downstairs and I asked the volunteer in charge of cooking the breakfast if it would be okay if this man came in for a meal. "Of course," she said. "There's enough for everyone. Come on in." So I showed him the buffet table. And the volunteer loaded up his plate with as much food as he wanted, and he sat down to enjoy a good meal and good conversation. Now, I'm not telling you this story because I'm proud of it. It feels a little funny telling it now, but I wanted to be honest because sometimes we have to learn how to practice radical hospitality. It doesn't always come naturally. It's not easy and we make mistakes, but we can learn and we can get better at it, which is why I love church so much, because it is a learning ground and it can be a place for us to practice hospitality and rehearse for the beloved community, which is not now, but will be. I no doubt made the man feel uncomfortable and unwelcome while I was tripping all over myself and my own feelings and anxieties in that moment, trying to figure out what to do. And I don't know if he forgave me, but I do know that the experience changed my life and my perspective. The woman who said to me, "Yes, of course he can come in. We have enough for everyone." She was my teacher that morning. She didn't shame me for my actions. She didn't lecture me. She was simply kind and loving and showed me how to be more generous. She showed me how to practice radical hospitality by modeling it. We can do this for one another in the church. We can provide opportunities for practice, for practicing embodying the beloved community. Here at People's Church, we see glimmers of it. Sometimes we get it right. And when we fall short, we learn from our experiences. So People's people, we are getting there. We are learning to practice radical hospitality. We are learning to see people as they are, not as we want them to be. We are learning to listen to the voices of the marginalized with compassion and love. We are striving to spend more time getting to know who new people are rather than telling them about who we are. And it's a work in progress, made especially difficult in a pandemic, but we keep practicing, and with patience, intention, and devotion, it is becoming a way of life, a way of being for us. As Homan and Pratt say, in genuine hospitality, we work to make our entire existence a welcoming table, a place prepared for others to be at ease, to receive from us comfort and strength. Hospitality teaches me to work at becoming someone who is easy to be with, either as guest or host. Hospitality becomes a way of life as we become more open. It will not happen without preparation, and unless you intend it to happen. So when we speak of preparing a table, we refer to the intention and the work of making space for another human being. The black woman in Alice Walker's story, the homeless man in mine, the countless people who may have come and gone from our congregations who didn't know where to find a place at the table, need us to widen our welcome, need us to do better and make more space. So let's do this. Let's see if we can take up this challenge with kindness and compassion. Let us embody radical hospitality in all we do. Let's widen our welcome, because Unitarian Universalism is a life-saving, life-transforming faith. It is a generous faith that gives us the opportunity to practice and listen and go deeper. And if all goes well, it offers us a glimmer of that beloved community, which is not now, and yet shall be. May this be so. May we be the ones to make it so.